Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Lean Keys, Real Talk 3000. I couldn't really tell you exactly why it's 3000, but we were just feeling it. I was just feeling it, so we're just going with it, you know. It's a vibe. So Lean Keys, Real Talk 3000, we here. Keys is out here. Lee's is out here. Lee, what up? What up, bro?
Hey, Keys, can you hear me, bro?
Yeah, I can hear you, bro.
Okay, because my number ain't popping up on the screen. It's like a 606 number, but I know that ain't me. But okay, what to do, man?
I think it's just because we had the two episodes, and then I just had to cancel the other episode like right before we got on because they was trying to run both shows at once. So you could be in, I don't know, you could be in the, I don't even know. But you on here, though.
Yeah, I'm up here.
Word. Well, there's a couple of things going on. UFC 280 is next weekend. I know last time we started up our preview the previous week, I think it was, for 280, we started pretty much breaking down the fight the previous week, and then we got into our final predictions the week of. So we could kind of start getting into UFC 280 tonight if you're feeling it. And you also just had Jake Paul and Anderson Silva's boxing match that just went down a couple of days ago. So we could definitely get into that if you're feeling it too. So, and whatever else, you know, I see, you know, Aljamain Sterling is on Twitter. He's everywhere saying that he's not fighting until next June. I see a lot of fans on MMA Twitter are furious about that. I don't know why he's responding to all these bots. You know, the Bantamweight World Champion is out here responding to dudes with one follower on Twitter. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe the fame's getting to his head a little bit. His fight with TJ was definitely the biggest fight of his career. That's probably the height of his career so far. You know, you could always go higher, but that's, to me, the biggest fight he's had. And he had a very good showing. But, hey, are the lights getting too bright, you know, for Aljamain Sterling, bro?
Why June, though? Did he say a reason why June?
Well, I think he said
he didn't take no damage in the TJ fight. Basically, he dominated that fight. So why June? That, if I'm a fan, I'm mad too. It's like, that's what, 9 months?
Yeah, that's basically, eight months. I mean, we're in November now, so really 7 months. But still, that does seem like a chunk of time. I didn't see his exact reason. I know he was talking about, you know, training. The training camps for five-round fights are pretty harsh on the body and stuff like that. And, you know, I saw him mention that, but I didn't watch his. I know he put out a video explaining his reasoning for that, and I haven't watched the video yet, so I couldn't tell you the full thing.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that. Like you said, we just went into November. So basically, you got November, December, then June is 6 months. That's 8 months, bro. That's like, that's more than, that's half a year, man. It's like, bro, you didn't take no damage. I just don't see the UFC sitting back and letting that fly. I just don't see them sitting back letting that fly. Because basically what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to have a number one contenders fight in the interim. So what you're going to have, Marlon Vera versus Sean O'Malley too in the interim. And then you're going to have him fight. Because you can have Sean O'Malley and Marlon Vera fight, February? Late January, February? And then basically you're going to wait another March, April, May, June. So you're going to wait another 4 months for him to defend the belt? I don't think the UFC going to let that fly unless he got some kind of injury or something. But that seemed like a bunch of tomfoolery to me.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know exactly what it is. But regardless of what it is, I went back and looked. Because I was talking to somebody, I think it was one of my coworkers, because I got a couple coworkers now that we talk about fights. And I was telling him about it, and he was like, damn, like he wasn't really liking it. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, Aljamain Sterling fights a lot, you know, he fights a lot. And then I went back and I looked up Sherdog, and I realized that he's fought, his TJ fight would be his third fight in the past year and a half, basically.
So basically, he fights every 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, it took him a year. Like, the last time when he rematched Yan, that was... Wait a second. How is that? Nah, there's no way. Because I remember watching him rematch Yan. They said that was a... They said that was a while ago. Hold on. I need to look this
yeah,
up again.
He sat out a while for the Yan fight.
Yeah, but Yan Sterling, too, was recently. That was this year. I remember watching that. That fight
was... Yeah, that was like in the summertime.
Yeah, that just happened. So I'm trying to remember when that was. Maybe that was in July?
I'm about to look it up now.
Because I know that was in 2022. Because I just happened. I remember that one. But it was a year. You know what it was? It was a year between the first time he fought Yan.
And the first fight and the second fight, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
He won the belt March 6, 2021. And then he didn't fight Yan again to April 9th, 2022. And then he fought TJ October of 2022. So let's say April, May, June, July, August, September. So basically another six. He had 6 months between fights. And if you look at before the first Yan fight, man, dude, he be having a long time between fights. All right, Keys. He fought Pedro Munhoz June 2019. He fought Corey Sandhagen June 2020. Then he fought Yan the first time March 2021. And then he fought Yan the second time April 2022. And then he just fought again a couple weeks ago. He takes a lot of time off between fights.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was kind of, I guess I was a little bit off when I thought he was a frequent fighter. I guess I thought he was more frequent than that, but I guess I was wrong.
Thinking of when he was fighting to get to the belt, because you think about it, 2017 was his busiest year. He fought January 2017, April 2017, July 2017, and December 2017. So he fought four times in the year 2017, twice in 2018, then twice in 2019. So basically, his new trend is he's fighting twice a year. That's what he's trending towards now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy when we're like, you know, we're watching guys like Volkanovski wanted to fight. Volkanovski wanted to do, he did April versus, he was supposed to fight Holloway, he fought Zombie, he did April. Then he turned right around and fought Holloway in July. So that fight was, those were 3 months apart. So Volkanovski did April and then turned basically right around into another training camp and then fought in July. And then he would have fought a third time because he was the official
was
backup
for
the fight we just watched. So really, he tried to fight three times. He fought twice, but you know, if it were up to him, he would have fought three times. And really, you don't really have a clear contender. I mean, you could argue maybe now, but at least at that time, you know, when he fought Holloway the third time, there really, and then like up until really recently, there really wasn't anybody at 145 for him to fight, and there still kind of isn't really a clear contender there. So. But Volkanovski is out there, man. He's fighting. He's fighting, and Oliveira's been fighting. You see how Oliveira's been turning around and fighting guys? You know, what Oliveira fought in, I think when he won the belt was in May of 2021.
Yep.
It was around the same time as Aljamain won his belt, or maybe just after. So Oliveira won the belt in May 2021, and then Who do you fight right after that?
He fought Dustin Poirier December 2021. And then five months later.
A bit longer than I realized. Okay, y'all there kind of had a chunk of time right there. That's kind of like Aljamain's timeline. He's looking at like 7 months. So 7 months.
Yeah, but I think.
But then
if you look at the quality of competition, though.
5 months later.
Yeah. So he's really been active for a champion.
And then after Gaethje, he fought 5 months later. He just fought Islam in October. So he pretty much went from May to December. So Oliveira, so the longest time off. And then before the May fight, he fought Tony in December. So he fought Tony in December. Then he threw 5 months. Then he fought 5 months, and then he fought Chandler for the vacant title. He won the belt. And then the longest time that he took was 7 months. Was in between the Chandler and Poirier fight. And after the Poirier fight, he took 5 months and then fought Gaethje. And then right after Gaethje, he basically went into a camp and took – there was 5 months in between that and the Islam fight. So pretty much you could say Oliveira was fighting on average pretty much
– every 6 months.
Most of it was – it will really – I mean, three – Tony and May – it was really three out of four of those were 5 month layoffs, you know, there was 5 months between three out of four of those fights. The only one that got the only long stretch was between Gaethje, between when he won the belt, Chandler and Poirier. That was the only, and that was 7 months. That was the longest stretch that he's had in his last four or five fights.
I just don't like it, man. I mean, I just think, a champion fighting twice a year, I just don't think that's acceptable, man. I think you should be at least – but once again, Keys, it goes back to something that you put on Twitter a few weeks back. If you think they was paying their champions $1 million a fight, I bet you they fight more than twice a year. I bet you they'd be in there at least three times, pushing it to maybe four. To fight for that $1 million. So, but for a champion to fight twice a year, that's unacceptable, man. I can't get behind that. Unless you get injured. If you get injured, yeah, I have no choice but to wait. But if you ain't injured and you just arbitrarily choose to fight twice a year, that's just bad business, man.
I like three times a year, to be honest. I think three times for a champ should be the max. I think, and ironically, I said that should be the max because the last person who fought four, the champion who fought four title fights in a year was Max Holloway. And Max Holloway, it wasn't in one calendar year, but it was over 12 months. Max Holloway
over 12
four
months,
title
yep.
fights. And I want to say he's the last one to do that. Because he fought Frankie, he fought Volkanovski, he fought Ortega, and he fought somebody else. Oh, Poirier. He fought Poirier. So he had all four of those with title fights, and he did that in the span of 12 months. But it does catch up to you, and not everybody's built like that. You know what I'm saying? Holloway's obviously, the dude is like a different breed, man. Like, clearly, you know, we know that. But I think what would have been fair is that Holloway should have just did those three fights. And then before he fought Volkanovski the first time, I think he should have taken a little bit of a break. You know what I mean? Because he went right from he went from one fight to the next fight, that whole stretch. Like, he never really took time, I feel like. Didn't let his body.
Yeah.
Down. So I would have liked to see, after he fought Frankie, which was in, I don't want to say that was in July of that year, and then he fought Volkanovski in December. I would have liked to see him take a little bit more time off and then fight Volkanovski like in that following year at some point, you know.
And plus, you got to think that he fought Poirier on short notice. Remember, that was a short notice fight that he took. So,
and it was in a different weight class.
Yeah, and it was in a different weight class. So, remember, me and you. I was like, man, I appreciate him stepping in, man, but it's just a bad time. because he had already been in like some classic fights and some wars, and it wasn't like he was finishing guys, but he was definitely going in there putting in five quality good rounds with the output he was putting out. So I know at that time that he took the Poirier fight, we was like, all right, you know, we appreciate him stepping up. But at the same time, we was like, I just don't think that's good for him right now. And lo and behold, he went out there and what? He got dominated by Poirier. And then came back and lost to Volkanovski, man. So I just think that Poirier fight took something out of him. And, you know, we don't know that for sure, but I just think, in my opinion, now that I look back on it, I think it may have took something out of him.
I think if to get back, like, I think if you're the champ, I think you go first quarter, summertime, and then fourth quarter. I think that would be the best way. You know, I don't know what they go through or what the claims are or what injuries they might have, but, you know, in a perfect world, I would like to see it be, you know, champion, undisputed title fight quarter one, second one over the summer, and then a third one end of the year, you know, around the holidays, you know, maybe even just do December. Because then that way you can stretch it out and you can fight about every 6 months. You could do a January fight or a February fight, and then you do a July fight. You have 5-6 months in between those, right? And then you do 5 months in between and you go to December. So you have, it's like 5-6 months in between each championship fight. I think that's reasonable. I think if you Volkanovski turn around fighting Holloway 3 months later, I mean, he destroyed Korean Zombie, but the fact that he turned around 3 months, I mean, I appreciate it, but I don't know, like, should a champion have to fight every 3 months? Like, does that kind of seems slim to you or not?
No, I think that's too much. I think twice. I'm with you with the train of thought that three times in a calendar year. So let's say if you fight in March, your first fight in March. If you fight between March of 2022 to March of 2023 three times, I think that's acceptable. You know, so, but some of these guys, man, they about that action, man. They're about getting out there and fighting because, what, Kevin Holland, man, that guy, I want to say, what, in 2021, he was taking every short notice fight he could take. I was like, man, this dude is a beast.
Yeah, but it's just when you get up to the level where it's like Kevin Holland, if he were to, and he is a beast, but if he were to go up and fight the guys that he would, you know, he fights Chimaev and you fight Covington, Usman, like the best guys in his division.
Yeah.
You know, at welterweight, like you can't fight guys like that on such, like, in these small spans of time, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you're fighting,
Bobby
you're preparing
Green
for those types of fights, it's like you're going to start taking a lot of losses. You can't just be, like, out here, you know, loosely just fighting everybody and, like, just beating yourself down and expecting to beat, you know, some of the best fighters in the world. It's like, once you get up in that division, it's like he wouldn't be able to – he would have to slow down, you know. I mean, the money would probably get, you know, taller too, so he probably would slow down. But, you know, you also are facing guys that you can't just roll out of bed and fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I'm looking at Kevin Holland's schedule. And he fought five times in 2020, three times in 2021, and three times in 2022. So I kind of like his activity, you know. The only thing is between the Derek Brunson fight and the Vettori fight, he must have took the Vettori fight on short notice because he lost to Brunson in March and fought Vettori in April. So, yeah, I think that was a short notice fight. But, yeah, he did fight five times in 2020, man, which is crazy. He fought May, August, September, October, and December. God. So,
he's
yeah,
a,
man,
he's
that's,
a beast,
that's
man.
Crazy.
He's gone.
So, yeah, man, I don't think the UFC gonna ride with what what's going on with Aljamain Sterling fighting in June. I think he might be the first champion that they might get tired of because of inactivity. I mean, we went through it with Tyron Woodley, but Tyron Woodley always seemed to get hurt in his fights. Usman was like that too early in his title reign, where he would get hurt every fight. But Aljamain ain't even hurt, Keys. So I don't know, man. They might threaten with stripping him of the belt or something, but really, can they do that? No, I don't think
But you remember at the same time, though, you get me on the Woodley topic, man. Don't do this. Don't do this, man. We had a lot of disagreements about what happened.
Woodley was taking off a lot in between fights. Come on now, let's be honest.
If you look at all this, so lay it down the line, maybe, but in between, because I know, well, I'm just saying the fact of these three fights were like this. It was, he fought, he did three title fights in what was it, November? Was it November when they did the McGregor? Because it was on that card. So it was, yeah, November. And then he did the rematch in April. And then he fought Damian Maia, I think, in July. So his first three title defenses were in the span of 8 months, bro. He defended his title three times in 8 months.
Yeah, July, November. He won the belt in July. He fought in November. Then he fought again in March. Then he fought
in
July.
Okay, 4 months.
Yeah, because
he
rematched
July,
Stephen Thompson.
Year, right?
Yeah, he fought Damian Maia in July. But then after that, it became September 2018. After he fought Damian Maia in July 2017, he didn't fight again in September 2018. Then he fought March of 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, so 6 months in between those two. And that one isn't that bad. You know what I mean? We're just talking about 6 months with Oliveira. So between the Till fight and the Usman fight, I don't think was too bad. But I think the worst one was in between Maia. I think the point you're talking about is between the year and change between Damian Maia and Darren Till, because that's a long time. That's a really long time. Like I'm surprised. Like a year and 2 months. That's a long time.
Yeah, that was a while.
That's a long time. That's insane. So that's the period that you know you're probably remembering. But all the rest, like I feel like he was on a lot of cards, man. He was, like, one of the dudes. That's why at that time I was, like, such a fan of him, because I was at least like, damn, this dude's really putting in work as a champion. What other champion? I used to always say he was the most active champion, and he said he wasn't. We debated about that for hours, man.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot because I was like, damn, man, this dude get hurt after every fight. But
yeah, well, that's. I think Aljamain is saying that he might be saying he's hurt now.
If he's saying that guy's lying.
What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? He's Woodley 2.0.
No, I'm not gonna go that far. All I'm saying is I'm not gonna go that far because I know you that you might get sensitive about that, but. Don't you feel like Aljamain fighting in June is kind of bogus, though?
I mean, since he said it, I really haven't like had the time to sit and think about that. Like, I haven't because I wanted to watch the video and see why he's saying June before I really said anything. So I really hadn't had not taken the time to like really watch that and then like. And think about that. So I don't know. It does seem kind of weird. I mean, when you're going into a fight with TJ, and I don't even think he got hit in that fight. I don't even think he got hit. And he pretty much dispatched PJ like dance. He was a I don't even think he got hit, bro. I don't even think he got touched.
Let me pull up the stats to the fight, and I'll let you know. Because,
I think the only contact in the fight was Aljamain smashing TJ's head in off the canvas. And I hate to say that. I'm just trying to be real, though. Regardless, like, he just beat that boy down. That was the only contact. It was just Aljamain bashing his head into the canvas. That was it. That was
okay.
It, man.
TJ landed, according to the stats, he landed 13 total strikes. 8 significant strikes, 3 to the head, 2 to the body, and 3 to the legs. So Aljamain only got touched up 13 times in that fight. That's all I'm gonna say. And he talking about he don't want to fight to June. Come on, Keys, man. We can't give him a pass for that, dog. We can't allow that, man. We can't allow that, dog. Man, we can't allow that, man.
Yeah, I didn't say I was – hey, I never said I was giving him – I never said he got a pass. I didn't say that. I just didn't say anything.
and then on top of that, he got touched 13 times, and he had 7 minutes of ground control. All right, that's all I'm gonna say on that. Hey, but you know what, man? I do gotta ask you this because I know me and you aren't the biggest Khabib fans, but this kind of ran across my mind when Islam won the belt. Is Khabib a better corner man or a better fighter? If you had to choose, what you think?
I mean, I'll tell you this. He pretty much, like, there was a moment. I'm just going to reference this moment because I thought this was kind of incredible, to be honest. So I didn't see, and I'm still kind of mad that I didn't see this fight live. But my boy Bilal Muhammad, I was just talking about him last week. Shout out Bilal Muhammad, by the way. Follow him on social media, BullyD170. That's, you know what I mean? That's my guy. So anyways, we're going to have to get him on the show one time. So anyways, Bilal Muhammad, right, and Sean Brady, I didn't get to see the fight. And I'm still kind of mad I didn't get to see that fight live. But it is what it is. So one thing I think ESPN posted it. ESPN posted a clip during when he was throwing. So Bilal was loading up a right hand and they someone go, I don't know how they got this moment on camera. I mean, I guess they probably got cameras like kind of orbiting the octagon during the fights. Maybe they caught it with one of those. You had to it because it was like this was a crazy. Incredible moment, but so Coach Khabib is coaching Bilal for the fight, and you see Bilal load up a right hand, throws the right hand at Brady, and you see Khabib stand was up out of his seat at the exact moment. Khabib is almost like fighting while he's almost like shadow boxing standing up, but Khabib it's like he was controlling him by an Xbox controller. Khabib threw
like
the right
Pinocchio.
Hand. Did you see it?
Yeah, remember, I think they showed it, like, I want to say they showed that angle on the replay of the finish, or they may have panned to it when they was talking about it. And it
Man,
was like
he threw the
he
right
was
hand
in
at
there
the exact same time.
Same time as Bilal, yep.
That was crazy. So I think overall, I think, man, I mean, so far, they make a good case. You know, he makes a good case at being a better coach than a fighter, I think. He does. I mean, to have a moment like that, and it's if you're coaching Bilal to that win, I mean, you never even saw Khabib getting – and this is just me kind of, like, treading the outside. You know what I mean? I'm not going, like, into the, like, super specifics, but, like, this is me treading the outside. Like, you never really saw – when do we see Khabib – getting a standing TKO in his career. You know what I mean? When did he ever do that?
I have never seen him do it.
Yeah, so, like, when has Khabib thrown a right hand like that and been beating a guy up on the feet like that? You know what I mean? So, like, obviously, Bilal's his own man, his own fighter. You know, and he's got other coaches. I would think he's doing, you know, striking coaches and everything. But how is Khabib coaching guys to, you know, beating an undefeated guy in the stand up, and basically, you know, destroying him on the feet? How are you coaching him to doing that, but Khabib never did that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, man, because when I was thinking about it, I was like, man, I wonder if Key's thinking about this, because I know we rag on his record, you know, him being a fighter, about him probably having maybe 10 quality fights in his whole career. But then when I started looking at the guys that he coached, I'm like, man, these guys are actually pretty good. And, you know, I was like, man, maybe he is a better coach than he is fighter. So I'm kind of leaning towards that way also. And plus, whenever you coach somebody to a championship, you know, that kind of means something, you know, because it takes a lot of hard work, you know, good coaching, good training, you know, for you to become a champion in the UFC. The UFC ain't just going to hand you a belt. You got to earn a belt. So I was looking at him, I was like, man, this guy, and then when you listen to him in the corner, he is making the right moves, telling his fighters, hey, I need you to do this, this, and this. Hey, you got to watch this. And his fighters, they respond. I was like, man, this guy's actually, you know, all right. So I'm going to go 60-40 on this one, that he's a better corner man than fighter. 60-40. Because the only reason I'm going to go 60-40, Keys, is because I always got to go back to his first 20-some fights as a pro. His first, no, whatever it was before Al Kenta. I got to go back to those fights and be like, yeah, kind of suspect. A lot of tuna cans in there, buddy. So, yeah, we can't, you know, suspect. So, yeah, man, I'm gonna say he a better corner man than fighter, although he was a great fighter too.
For sure, and we'll touch on that a bit more soon. I want to get into what just went down a couple of days ago, this past weekend, bro. So Jake Paul, you know, we got to get to it. You know, we got to. So Jake Paul boxed Anderson Silva, and Jake Paul beat Anderson Silva by decision. I couldn't tell you what exactly the numbers were, but he beat Anderson Silva by decision, and now, you know, you see a lot of people on Twitter talking, you know, about Jake Paul. Obviously, he makes it, you know, his name. He knows how to get his name in the headlines, you know, how to get people to hate him and just talk about him in any fashion. So he's a big, you know, he's a big topic right now. And first of all, what do you think about how that fight went down, and, you know, what are your thoughts overall? What's the next thing?
Well, I'm going to be honest. You know, I'm really not into the celebrity boxing thing. I was hoping Anderson Silva won. But when, I think it was Thursday or Friday, that it was some chatter going around that they might not let Anderson Silva fight because of his physical. They was kind of worried about his head and stuff like that. But then he got cleared. So I was kind of worried. And I was like, all right, so... But I gotta say that I'm not impressed with Jake Paul, man. Until he fight a real boxer, somebody that's actually a boxer, not no UFC striker, you know, I'm not feeling that. Until he fight a boxer, I can't respect it, bro. And I know. One thing I can respect about Jake is people are getting paid fighting him. They are definitely making healthy paydays fighting him. But as far as the competition and the sport, I just don't see him advancing the sport of boxing until he fight a real boxer. So, and now he calling on Nate Diaz, who we know is another UFC guy. And Nate is probably going to get the biggest payday in his career. But do I see Nate beating Jake in boxing? No. So, I don't know, man. I just think, we done talked about this before. And it's amazing how you have come around to the Jake Paul thing when you were totally against it in the past, but it seemed like you kind of embracing it now. Well, I'm still on my stance of I just can't get behind it, bro.
Wait, were you saying that Nate, who, wait, what are you saying about the Nate thing? He could beat him?
I don't think Nate can beat Jake Paul.
I think
Nate will go in and Nate going to fight with a lot of heart. I mean, but I just don't see Nate beating him. One thing I'm going to give Jake credit for is he has got better. If you look at his first fight to his fight against Anderson Silva, he has definitely got better. He has taken the craft more seriously. So I give him credit for that.
I mean, hey, you know, what it really was is it's one thing to keep your stance over time, and that's my thing, firm stance, you know. But it's another thing to, like, in this case, I mean, first of all, like, to change our perspective or to, you know, receive new information that makes you change your mind and change your opinion. And in this case, and in our respect, you know, that's the way that is too. And in this case, it's Jake Paul. It came to a point where he won my respect, you know, and that's really the point that I got to, and I changed my mind about it. You know, I don't really remember exactly. I know what you're saying. I know, you know, I was probably opposite side of the fence at one point. I don't really remember exactly what I would say about him, but I know there was a point recently where he won my respect. I think it was when he did the Woodley fights. I think when he beat Woodley the first time, I was like, okay. All right, and then he beat him the second time. I was like, okay. And he definitely won my respect the second time. He beat Woodley two times. I was like, okay. It was really from that point. I was like, all right, this guy. And then, you know, he won my respect there. And then since that point, I was like, all right, like, you know, I'm listening to things he's saying, and I'm looking at the, you know, I'm kind of analyzing, like, the way guys go at him and, like, the angles and what they talk about. And I'm like, this stuff just isn't. Like, if dudes really wanted to, I just started to kind of see through a lot of the shit that people were saying about him, and I realized that, man, it's, he's, like, to me, to call him, the fact that people still call him a YouTuber is insane to me. I think that's absolutely insane, because it's like kidding yourself, you know. I think if you're still referring to him as a YouTuber, you're kidding yourself. You know, that's pretty much what you're doing. It's like, it's because the dude is a boxer, man. He's a boxer. He's an absolute boxer. And it's like, and if you're not referring to him either as a boxer or at least as a fighter, and you're calling him a YouTuber, like, you're not living in the real world. I mean, because if you're not going to call him a boxer, you better at least call him a fighter, because he's a boxer. He's a boxer, and if not that, he's a fighter. You know, after that, he's a fighter. But regardless, the dude is past – you don't – he's beating guys. He has real skills, and I think just it comes to the point where you're gonna keep putting guys in front of him, and they're going to keep losing, you know what I mean? And you need to put him in front of – guys that you need to put them in front of real boxers, of course, but just realize that this is not like a kid that is just like halfway in the door. Like, this dude actually cares about getting better, and that's why he's looking better. And it's like he's serious about the game, man. It's very obvious. Like when you look at him, look at like listen to his interviews, look at the work he's putting in. I mean, he created a whole ass promotion to you know better everybody's situation, and it's like I don't think it's a facade, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people think it's a game he's playing or a facade. I don't think that at all. I think it's exactly what it's painted as. You know, I think he just cares about the game. He likes boxing. He wants to get better, and we're seeing him get better before eyes. And you know, obviously, he could be taking real boxes, and I'd like to see that happen. You know, very soon. I wanted to see that happen. With the last two fights they tried to do, but they fell through. And, you know, I was at least happy that he stepped up to fight Anderson Silva, because that's at least the guy that at this current time is competing in boxing. You know what I mean? It's at least the guy that has been competing in boxing and is not currently an MMA fighter, you know? So that's a step up in that regard to me. But I think, yes, the next step is not to fight a Nate Diaz, to fight a real guy, you know? Fight somebody that is a full-time boxer. You know? Maybe a guy's been fighting for a couple of years, you know, at least.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what weight class he fight at, because I want to see what fighters are actually in that weight class.
I want to say he fights at 210 pounds.
210?
Yeah, I want to say it's 210. And I think they did that because when I was reading about the Rockman fight, I was reading about that, how I think they're really – I don't think there is a 210 weight class, but I think they just – it's a special thing that they kind of do for him. And I think 200 – 200, I think, I believe 200 is a weight class in boxing. I don't think that's the 210 weight class. So I think they just do like him and Anderson met up at, I think 200, maybe 200 pounds or 195 maybe.
I want to say, all right, light heavyweight is up to 175. I want to say that's cruiserweight. Yeah. Cruiserweight is up to 200. Anything above 200 is considered a heavyweight. So I don't think he will fight at heavyweight. I think he will fight more at a cruiserweight. So I'm looking at these cruiserweight, and I don't know none of these guys in the top 10 in cruiserweight. I don't know none of these guys. I know Usyk started off at cruiserweight, and he moved up to heavyweight. Evander Holyfield started off at cruiserweight and moved up to heavyweight. But none of these guys are really like, well, you know, me, I'm not really strong on boxing records anyway. I mean, the one guy, the number 10 guy got 3 losses, the number 9 got 1 loss. Number 8 won loss. Number 7 got 6 losses. Number 8 won. So, I mean, like I said, at least he's getting better. And his skill set is getting better. If his skills weren't getting better, I would be like, man, this guy's a joke. But being that his skills have got better, especially if you go back and watch his first fight. I saw an interview that he did this week, and he's called out Floyd Mayweather. First of all, Floyd Mayweather ain't fighting you at 200 pounds, bro. So that ain't happening. Number two, you are going to have to meet Floyd somewhere probably around, I'm going to have to say 175, 180. At the most, Keys, I think Floyd may go up to 175, maybe, because he normally fought at, 147, no more than 154. So if he can lure Floyd out of retirement, that might be something. I wouldn't be impressed with Nate Diaz. Maybe if he could maybe lure Manny Pacquiao out of retirement to a fight, maybe. But those guys are too small. And I don't see him trying to acquiesce to meeting them somewhere in the middle. So he going to make them come up to his weight. So, you know what, Keys? I just thought of something. I just thought of it. You ready?
That's it.
Jake Paul should reach out for Roy Jones Jr. Now, that's the reason why I say Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr. in the prime of his career was probably the pound, not going to say probably, he was the pound for pound best boxer in the world. Towards the end of his career, he became a guy, all his fights were finished with him laying on his back looking into the lights. Now, do I think Roy Jones should beat Jake Paul? Yes. Do I think Roy Jones would beat Jake Paul? I would say I don't know. Now, if Roy Jones took it seriously and came in and fought Jake Paul, I think this would be the fight I would be interested in. Because, once again, Roy Jones is a credible boxer. And Jake ain't fighting him in his prime. So, I don't know, man. I think that's to be the guy I'd rather see him fight. Not no Nate Diaz. Not another MMA guy. But Roy Jones Jr.
So we had a tweet that went pretty viral, right? And I don't know, to admit to that question, I think that'd be a cool situation if it were to happen with Roy Jones Jr. That'd be pretty cool, I guess. I think he's in his 50s, so I don't know. I don't know if that happens, but I guess that'd be a cool idea. I'd like to see Jake get back to one of these guys that you know fell through before the Anderson fight. I'd like to see him go get one of those guys, you know, whether it be Fury or Rockman. I'd like to see him try to run back one of those. That's what I'd like to see. And then as far as this tweet, so we had this tweet that went viral, bro. I don't know if you noticed it.
I noticed it.
So this. You saw it?
Yep.
Yeah, so we had this account, MMA Squared, and they were talking about the payouts. Now this is the part, when you say, like, I changed my tone on Jake Paul, this is a part of the reason that I changed my tone, because I just don't agree with these people that are reaching. These are reaches. This is what I feel like a lot of people are reaching for reasons to shoot Jake Paul down and to hate him. But you're coming up with reasons that don't even make sense. Like, it's not even a credible statement. So, Exhibit A, this account, MMA Squared, said Silva made $1 million per fight, usually $800K guaranteed during the prime of his UFC career, but please, Mr. Paul, leave these martial artists to financial freedom. And, you know, I get what he's saying, you know, because whatever. So, and then the picture says Jake made $1.5 million with 65% of the pay-per-view pie, and then Anderson made $500,000 plus 35% of the pay-per-view pie. That is a big payday for Anderson Silva. This is a non-championship fight. He's going over to boxing, okay? This is just a regular bout, and he's in the main event with a percentage of the pay-per-view of $500,000. That is and did you read my response?
Yes, I did.
So I said, major reach here. Anderson made $1 million per fight during, quote-unquote, the prime. And I have to call this out because this is what this guy is referring to, meaning while he was the champion. And very few fighters in the UFC are making a $500K bag for a fight right now without being on a champion contract.
Exactly.
This is a huge payday for Anderson, realistically. I don't see the problem. And we got 115 likes on that. 150 likes. I appreciate y'all. Thank you. for acknowledging, you know, what I said here, because we always, it's called Real Talk. We try to keep it real on this show, and I just had to clap back at that, because that didn't make any sense. You know, the guy is insinuating, like I said, reaching for reasons to hate this guy when he is giving guys huge, like, I don't, that is not, like, that is a huge payday for Anderson Silva. I don't know what this guy was trying to say with that. I mean, you know, I'm not even going to go further into it. That is a huge payday for Anderson Silva. And the only reason that this guy could even say that, you know, oh, he was making usually 800K to a million, is because Anderson Silva was a middleweight champion. You know what I mean? Like, are you going to leave out that? Like, the fact that he was on a champion contract, and, you know, also the fact that, like, during his championship reign, you could, he
was
is,
the face
like,
of
that
UFC.
Version of Anderson Silva. That
he was the face of the UFC.
What?
He was the face of the UFC. So,
exactly.
Yeah, he was making money. But I definitely agree with you, Keys. Towards the end of his career, he wasn't making no $1 million. He probably was making, what, about $350, luckily $500K a fight, maybe, towards the end of his career? Maybe? Yeah, I mean, Jake, I can't take that away from him, Keys. And this is one thing that I agree with you about when it comes to Jake Paul. These guys that are getting in the ring with him, they are making lifetime money. He's not sending them out there giving them $100,000 to get in the ring with him. He is giving them a flat rate fee and a piece of the pay-per-view. Man, just a piece of the pay-per-view by itself is probably more money than what their standard purse is. So I like what Jake is doing when it comes to the payouts. I just want to see him fight better competition. But boxing as a sport, y'all could learn from Jake Paul. Jake Paul is going out here. He's promoting the fights. He's actually the one that's out here making sure that the fighters get paid. And he's doing that without a middleman or a quote-unquote governing body. So, boxer, take note. Promoters work for the fighters. They don't work for you. If you mandate a boxer to fight somebody, you mandate it, the promoters either get it together or you step in and you put it together. And guess what? The promoters get cut out because you gave them a chance to do their job, but they didn't get it done. So now everything falls back to the fighter. And I like that on Jake Paul's part, man. I love that part of his game.
I mean, to say that he's not helping guys make a lot of money is an insane statement to make. And that one there wasn't saying anything. And it's just a reach to try to say, like, try to find a reason to hate the guy. It's like you're trying to find a reason to hate the guy, and that's not any legitimate reason, and that's not even like what that account was pitching. It's just something that we get people like stirred up, and it's just like a hollow statement. Like, you're not really making any. There's no credibility here. You know what I mean? There's nothing to it. That's a hollow statement. It's false. And that's really it's false the way that it's being portrayed. You know what I mean? I think that's the thing. It's false the way it's portrayed. And, you know, it's like you said, that pay-per-view percentage right there, it's probably more money, like, than the actual purse is. You know what I mean? I, like, when the pay-per-view estimates haven't come out yet. I know Jake Paul, like, he put out a range, like a number range of what he thinks it might be or what it's looking like, but the official number hasn't come out yet. And when that number comes out, you know, I'll go ahead and do the math live on our show when it comes out, just to make it clear so we can just show what the – I don't know how exactly they factor it, but if it's 35% of the pay-per-view revenue, then we can figure out the pay-per-view revenue from knowing how many buys there were.
Yeah,
once we have the buys, we'll get the revenue, and I'll do the percentage right on the show live, and then you can see it. And when you realize it's 35% of that number, that's gonna be a crazy chunk of change, man. So y'all gonna start playing with me. Y'all gonna start playing, okay? Because there was no pay-per-view points for Anderson Silva after he was no longer a champion. You don't get
in the UFC.
Points
nope.
When you are not a champion, okay? So you're just gonna get what you get, and I don't know what his deal was, if he was getting a win bonus or what it was, but that's all. You know what I'm saying? That's it. And honestly, you don't even – that's not even counting if he was getting paid for other things. You don't even know what else was going on around that fight, because I'm pretty sure a lot of these guys are getting paid on things outside of the fight. You know what I mean? You never know what was going on around it that he probably made money from as well, you know? Other
yeah.
smaller events that might have went down, you know, that they could have put on that he could have made a bag from as well. You know, that happens. So who knows really if I would like to know the total amount of money Anderson Silva made from the purse, the pay-per-view points, which is going to be a lot, and then anything else related to the fight that went down, you know, before or after it. You know, I'd like to know what the total amount of money he made just because this fight was made. If we could get that number, I think there would be some serious justice that would be served. You know what I mean? When it comes out and we realize that Anderson Silva made like $1.5 million or $2 million or something like that, when that comes out, I think a lot of people would have to just zip their lips at that point, okay? Because it's for a guy that's, what is he, 40, so 2019, so I want to say Anderson's 47.
Yeah,
he's
47.
For a guy that's 47 years of age, man, that he got paid well for that fight, and that's what I'm gonna leave it on. So, you know, shout out to Jake Paul, man. I don't mind Jake Paul at all, and I'm a fan of Jake Paul, but I don't watch his fights. But the funny part is, and I said this on our Twitter the other day, I'm a fan of him. I don't mind him, but I don't watch any of his fights. All the people that they claim not fans of him, and they think he's trash and all this, somehow they watch all of his fights. So I'm trying to figure that out. Those are the people that are all tweeting about him on Twitter. They watch the fight. They have the video. They have the stream. Those are all those people. But how come someone like me that comes out in his defense isn't actually watching the fights, but the people that are attacking him are the people that are watching the fight. Those are people that are tuning in. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to understand it, man. I don't know. Maybe I'm confused, Lee. Maybe I missed something. You know what I'm saying? I know you're not watching them, but I'm saying a lot of these other people I know are watching them. I know they are.
And Keys, the thing is, it goes back to this. Man, when me and you used to talk about Floyd, people tune in to Floyd fights. Why? To see him lose. They hoping to see him lose. Most of them ain't tuning in to see him win, unless you're a Floyd fan. But it's like this. Half the people tuning in to see him lose, half the people tuning in to see him win. So either which way it go, you still tuning in, depending on what side of the fence you on. So,
and that's what I'm trying to say.
Thing is, me, I would never buy the pay-per-view because I just can't do it. I just can't do it until he fight a real boxer. I don't care. I just don't care about him fighting UFC guys because the Ben Askren thing really done it for me. When when he signed a fight or had a pay-per-view, where he's fighting a guy that could never strike in the UFC. I was done with Dan. So, but look, man, we talked about a lot tonight. You know, another great show. You know, Lee and Key's Real Talk 3000. We ain't even getting jumping to 281. So next Wednesday, we going full blown 281 preview and predictions. Gonna be a good one. So, hey, any last words, bro?
Yeah, we didn't even get to it because we just had to go in on all that we just went in on real quick, so that's fine. But next week, like you said, we're going full blast on UFC 281, man. And it's fire because they're back at MSG. You know, it's another big card, you know, right after Oliveira card. So we on it. We're getting right back into that. It's going to be dope. And, I don't have anything. I don't have anything really. I'm good. I mean, I was just a chatterbox, you know, this whole thing, man. I need a sip of water. I'm a cotton mouth over here, so I got nothing to say, man. Shout out to Pone Spring. Shout out to Pone Spring. That might be my last words, man.
Hey, that's what's up. Well, you know, thanks everybody for listening. Lee and Key's Real Talk. We are creeping into episode 300. But hey, another good show. As always,
the 3000.
Lee and Key's Real Talk 3000. As always, live your life to the fullest. Ride that mug till the wheels fall off. You get the wheels fixed, ride that mug a little bit more. And Lee and Key signing off as always. We end the show with a peace.